call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:30 p.m. Friday, February 28th. Committee members present today are Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Giesel, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Wilson. This afternoon, we have two items before the committee. We have Senate Bill 120, Administration of Psychotropic Medication by Senator Giesel, and SB 179, Nursing Licensure Multi-Compact by the Senate Rules Committee on behalf of the governor. Just remember to folks to silence your cell phones as a courtesy, and we are meeting today in room 205 in the Capitol building. First up, we have Senate Bill 120 by Senator Giesel. This is our first time hearing the bill. We'll take an overview of the bill's sponsor and take invited and public testimony. And we at this time, we'll invite Senator Giesel and staff to the table. And also to speak to the bill, I think we will we have folks online. We should have Deputy Commissioner Wall, Cindy Montgomery, and Dr. Michael Alexander. Senator Giesel, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Kathy Giesel, I am the senator for Senate District N, as in November. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 120 addresses the administration of psychotropic drugs. Alaska Psychiatric Institute has gone through some challenges lately. A bright light has been shown on many of those challenges. And this bill addresses one of those challenges, and that being the ongoing problem of a psychiatrist shortage in Alaska, which impacts the API. And those impacts fall on the patients. So the problem that SB 120 addresses is the psychiatrist shortage and its impact on patients. Currently, we have one psychiatrist employed at API. This psychiatrist works full-time, so at least 20 days a month, that's full-time, all year, 12 months of the year. Under our current statute, the psychiatrist is the only person who can conduct the initial assessment of a patient having a behavioral health crisis and decide whether to prescribe a psychotropic medication in that crisis situation. Psychotropic medications, Mr. Chairman, help calm a person down, make them safe, and ensure the safety of the staff and the other patients around them. So what is considered a psychiatric emergency or crisis situation? It is a situation where there is an acute disturbance in a person's behavior, thought, or mood, which, if untreated, may lead to harm either to the individual or to the others in the environment. What is a psychotropic drug? This is a medication that is typically prescribed, as I said before, to calm the person down. Some examples are olanzapine, chlorpromazine, haloperidol, and lorazepam. You might recognize lorazepam as a Valium-type medication, which is used for anxiety reactions. The other medications treat psychosis, bipolar disorder, and severe behavioral disorders. So back to the bill itself and the problem that it addresses. The problem is we need to better meet the needs of the patients at API. That is the number one mission of API, the best possible care for patients who need that care. An advanced practice registered nurse or a physician assistant is present in the hours when that psychiatrist is not available. And they are there observing any patient crisis, breakdown, or the buildup that leads to that crisis situation. So the APRN, Advanced Practice Registered Nurse, or the PA, has the information needed to make an educated judgment about the use of one of these psychotropic drugs. But they have to call the psychiatrist right now. If the psychiatrist is not present, they have to reach him on the phone. Maybe he's not near his phone and the crisis is escalating. The psychiatrist may not have met the patient yet or be as familiar with the patient as the APRN or the PA who are actually present and have watched what's happening. So the correction that this statute makes, the statute in Senate Bill 120 makes, is it allows for the swift assessment and helpful response to an escalating situation, which results in the best care for the patient. The bill allows that an APRN or PA who is observing this behavior, the escalating situation, is allowed to make the assessment, the diagnosis, and the decision whether to use the medication in this particular crisis situation. Then the patient receives immediate, appropriate care, and it ensures the safety of not only the patient, but all the folks around him, staff as well as other patients. So again, under Senate Bill 120, the APRN or PA, who already work at the Institute, make that assessment, they order the medication, they administer it, and it removes any delay in the care that is happening now, and removes an obsolete statute that requires that only the psychiatrist can order the use as a psychotropic medication. So you might ask, well, are these two clinicians qualified to do this? And the answer is yes. For one thing, these medications are already approved for use and prescription by APRNs as well as PAs, physician assistants. And these are the clinicians on the scene and have the best information with which to make the appropriate decision. So it's swift, timely, and appropriately used and de-escalates the situations. Again, the best care for the patient. You know, Mr. Chairman, we know that there have been times when API patients have had an escalation and a crisis situation arise, and they've actually assaulted someone and subsequently been sent to jail. Quicker, more consistent treatment will reduce the opportunity for these things to get out of hand. So the change in this bill, the use of de-escalation techniques and the medications will help keep patients in a safe hospital setting where they actually can be cared for appropriately, rather than being sent to a jail. So, Mr. Chairman, that is a summary of the goal of the bill. It's a pretty straightforward bill, but my staff, Jane Conway, is here and can certainly take you through the bill, and I'm available for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's go ahead and do a quick sectional, and then we can ask questions to bill sponsor. Ms. Conway?
Good afternoon. My name is Jane Conway, staff to Senator Kathy Giesel. I really had not prepared a sectional since we only have two sections of the bill, but I can go over that section one with the amendment that you have in your packets adds the PA to line 12. And that, Chair Wilson, was an oversight in the drafting of the bill, and we caught that a little bit later, and so we do have the amendment in your packet, and that's a pretty crucial part of the bill because it is, again, adding that physician assistant along with the APRN and the doctor to make the assessment of the situation, which right now they are not allowed to do.
Yeah, do a brief at ease.
Sure.
On the record.
This is Jane Conway, staff to Senator Giesel. I'll continue. Also, you will see a correction on line 11 on page 1 that takes out licensed. That's a legal correction because, of course, the physician is licensed. So that's just being removed from the statute. And then it goes on to say that, after the assessment is made, the behavior and the situation must be documented. There must be an explanation in the record books, and also they need to explain why, after other remedies are not successful, on why they want to give the drug. And then in number 2, it again takes out that word licensed and adds physician assistant or advanced practice registered nurse under who can write the order for the prescription or the psychotropic medication, and it outlines how that has to be done, written or oral, the dosage, the quantity, frequency, et cetera, is outlined in that section B. And then on line 15, we go to section C, and it outlines how many times or how long the medication can be prescribed for, which basically is 72 hours and nothing beyond that. Anything beyond that is outlined in the in statute in the next 4730839, and that outlines needing a court order if you need to go beyond those 3 days. So that requires court order, and but that is not part of this bill. And then it is the transition language and immediate effective date for Section 2.
All right. Any questions for the bill sponsor at this time? All right. I see that we have a few folks for invited testimony. On the phone first, we have Deputy Commissioner Wall. Mr. Wall, are you with us?
I am. Senator Wilson, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. If you want to go ahead and provide your comments to this bill.
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Albert Wall. I am the Deputy Commissioner of Health and Social Services. Very excited about this bill. It arose out of conversation with Senator Geisel about ways we can improve care and reduce stress in the staff at the at Alaska Psychiatric Institute. Senator Geisel was kind enough to come through the building at one point and spoke with a number of staff, and I really appreciate her involvement. We are grateful that she's sponsoring the bill, and we're eager to work with her to create a good product and are going to offer whatever resources we possibly can. From my point of view, this bill would take a great deal of stress off of our psychiatrists, who, as was previously mentioned, are on call 24/7, 365, and it creates a great deal of stress on them and a financial burden as well. And that's all I have, Senator, unless you have questions for me.
Any questions for Deputy Commissioner Wall? No, thank you, sir, for providing your testimony and being available. Next, we'll go to Cindy Montgomery. If you could state your name and affiliation and provide your comments and testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. I am Cynthia Montgomery. I am a psychiatric nurse practitioner at the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, and I'm very much in support of Senate Bill 120 because I believe the changes this bill will allow are in the best interest of our patients. So as I'm sure you've heard and as has been spoken to today, there is a dearth of psychiatric providers in Alaska. Because of this, API has been forced to use contractors and locum tenens providers to help provide care to the most seriously mentally ill patients in our state. These temporary psychiatrists are usually from outside of Alaska, and they are therefore unfamiliar with our unique laws surrounding mental health. Most states don't have a statute for crisis period medication. Because advanced nurse practitioners and physician assistants are currently unable to order crisis period medications, the RNs have to call one of these psychiatrists for these medications. And sometimes the patient's own provider can be standing right there and cannot give an order because it's a nurse practitioner or a PA. I've seen this happen many times. And unfortunately, as someone mentioned, because the psychiatrist might not be immediately available because of poor phone reception or driving or they're on another line or any other number of factors, they can't be reached immediately, and the medications needed to regain safety cannot be given in a timely manner. The psychiatrist that is reached may not be familiar with the patient and may be unwilling to prescribe crisis period medications because of that or because they don't understand the statute. I have been standing there and have seen an RN call a locum tenens psychiatrist and the psychiatrist not understand what the nurse is asking for and say to use the patient's PRN medications, and PRN means as needed. And the problem is that by the time the nurse is calling to get crisis period medication, the patient has already gotten out of control and is refusing to take these offered medications. Allowing the patient's own provider, who would be the nurse practitioner or PA, to prescribe the crisis period medications are in the patient's and the facility's best interest. The patient can get the medication that will prevent him or her from harming self or someone else and possibly going to jail for an assault, and that's not where we want our patients. They'll get the medication that will mitigate the damage that is done to the brain in the presence of psychotic agitation and aggression. And then the last thing I want to point out is, interestingly, the Joint Commission standards require that a licensed independent practitioner that is most familiar with the patient be responsible for that patient's care. So because of these reasons, I am in support of Senate Bill 120, and I hope that you will all consider passing this new legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Montgomery? Seeing none, thank you for being available and for your testimony today.
My pleasure.
Next, we have Dr. Michael Alexander. Dr. Alexander, are you with us today?
I am with you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. If you want to begin your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Michael Alexander. I'm the Chief of Psychiatry at Alaska Psychiatric Institute. I'm back at Alaska Psychiatric Institute as of last year, having worked here for a period of time before. This crisis medication bill is imperative for us. I'm the only psychiatrist they have, and as a consequence, I am doing call at least 20 to 25 days a month, meaning that I have to be by my phone waiting on calls. It is extraordinarily exhausting. And this whole process came to light only recently, and I believe it is because when API was initially started or envisioned, we only had psychiatrists and we didn't have any psychiatric nurse practitioners or PAs. And during that period of time, the bill was written for psychiatrists, but since over the last 10 years, we've added nurse practitioners and physician's assistants to the medical staff. And without having the nurse practitioner or physician assistant able to enter the crisis period medications, covering the on-call schedule becomes difficult. And they've done it in the past, and it's only a recent development when it was discovered about a year ago that it fell onto the psychiatrist to do this. So I think they're more than apt and capable. They're very good at what they do, and I think they should be given the opportunity to be able to take care of the patients the way they should be.
Thank you, Dr. Alexander. Any questions? No, thank you again for your testimony.
Thank you.
Those are invited. We're going to go ahead and at this time open public testimony for Senate Bill 120. Looks like we have Mike Hewall.
Marika Hewall.
Sorry.
Chairman Wilson, can you hear me? This is Marika.
Yes, Marika. Sorry about that with your pronunciation of your name. But if you want to begin your testimony, you may begin.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Marika Heatwool. I'm representing myself. I was formerly a nurse at API, and I'm currently a student pursuing a degree as a psychiatric nurse practitioner. And I just want to echo the previous and very thorough testimony in support of SB 120. It resolves an existing statutory discrepancy, and it ensures patient-centered care. I'll limit my comments to that since I'm in agreement with everything that's been said.
All right. Well, thank you. And that's it for the folks online. Is anyone here in the room in general would like to testify on Senate Bill 120? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. At this time, we seem to have an amendment for this bill. What is the will of the committee, Senator Von Imhoff?
I would like to move amendment number one.
Any objection? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number one passes. That concludes, comments, unless there are any other comments from the bill sponsor at this time or committee member questions. We'll go ahead and put this bill aside. If any committee members have any further amendments, please let our office know by Tuesday at 5 so that we can take future action on this bill at our next committee meeting. At our next up, we'll take up Senate Bill 179, Nurses Licensure Multi-State Compact by the Senate Rules Committee on behalf of the Governor. This is our first time hearing the bill, so we'll have an overview of the bill, a sectional analysis, and take invited and public testimony at this time. And we have a presentation, and we like to invite, I believe we have telephonically Commissioner Anderson online, And we have Director Sarah Chambers here in person, and Ms. Schroeder, the board chair, for a brief introduction, and Mary Ann Murray is also here. We have a whole sleuth of presenters here, a team of presenters to present Senate Bill 179 before us. And since we have a lot of different female voices today, it would be helpful for the record if we switch in between, if you guys can restate your name when each time someone else speaks. And with that, we'll turn the floor over to whoever would like to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, this is Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations Businesses and Professional Licensing, and Commissioner Anderson is on the line to introduce the first part of our presentation.
All right. Commissioner Anderson, are you with us?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee members, for allowing this bill to be heard today. This is an important bill, Senate Bill 179, which would enable Alaska to join the Nurse Licensure Compact. This is a multi-state compact that allows nurses to practice in all participating states. The Nurse Licensure Compact would help address the registered nurse shortage across the state, would increase flexibility of healthcare emergency preparedness, and still allow the state to maintain its autonomy. Currently, there are 34 states that have joined the NLC, and 11 states have pending legislation to join. The NLC is widely supported in Alaska. In a recent survey of Alaska licensees, 87% of Alaska resident nurses said they supported Alaska joining the compact. The Alaska Board of Nursing voted to support joining the NLC last year. We are confident that this bill is moving in the right direction for Alaska, and we hope to have your support on this bill as well. Now I'd like to turn the presentation over to my team. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Wilson, and distinguished members of the committee. For the record, my name is Danette Schlater, and I am the current chair for the Alaska Board of Nursing. I wanted just to take a brief moment to introduce you to our board. Kathy Hample is our RN educator, and she's been in nursing for over 40 years, and she currently has 3 master's degrees. Wendy Monrad is our APRN member. She has 29 years of nursing experience. 20 of these years have been as a certified registered nurse anesthetist. She served in the military and the U.S. Public Health Service. Lena Lafferty is one of our RN members. Her nursing experience includes long-term care and operating room nursing. Our LPN member, Emily Schubert, has experience in long-term care and occupational health. 2 of our most valued members are our public members. Shannon Connolly and Julie Tisdale have experience as business owners and educators, but more importantly, they represent our patient population. Finally, I've been a nurse for 25 years, and my career has been spent as a bedside nurse and as a clinical expert in maternity care. I have 4 college degrees related to healthcare, and I'm also a part-time faculty member in an online nursing program. The mission of the Alaska Board of Nursing is to actively promote and protect the health of citizens of Alaska through safe and effective practice of nursing as defined by law. Whereas our mission is to the protection of citizens, the board is also committed to support the art and science of nursing in the advancement of our profession. The board collaborates with appropriate partnerships and key stakeholders to find solutions to issues that are facing nursing. We do so by examining all sides of issues. Our decisions are made with careful consideration and with the intention of to support and promote nursing practice. Our vision is to use the power of imagination and creative thought to foresee potential future nursing practice innovations. We do so by proactive anticipation of changes in the scope of nursing practice and the workforce. The numbers in front of you are the total number of Alaska nurse licensees for fiscal year 2019. One of the duties of the Board of Nursing is licensing. There's a common belief that only the best nurses get Alaska licenses. The reality is that a license of any type is awarded to someone who meets the minimum requirements as established by law. In nursing, licenses are issued to nurses with over 50 years of experience and new graduates with zero experience. All nurses graduate from accredited nursing programs and sit for the exact same licensing examination. Licensing and competency are not synonymous. Of note, the licensing requirements under the NLC are more comprehensive than those in Alaska. The Alaska Board of Nursing voted to support the Nursing License Compact. We did so after listening to nurses and employers. We also examined the current evidence-based literature and nursing practice trends in Alaska and across the nation. We also considered the experiences of the other 34 state boards of nursing who have enacted this compact. We recognize that the original version of the NLC may not have been a good fit for Alaska. The board believes this enhanced NLC with its rigorous requirement for a multi-state license is a good fit. I'm here to represent the collective voice of the Alaska Board of Nursing, and we ask for your support for Senate Bill 179.
Thank you, Chairman Wilson and distinguished members of the committee. My name is Dr. Mary Ann Murray. I'm the executive administrator for the State Board of Nursing. So what's the problem we're trying to fix? On the slide behind you, the nursing facts that impact healthcare in Alaska kind of go over the multifaceted problems that we have. Currently in Alaska, the average time for a nurse to be licensed is about 12 to 16 weeks. That is because with the application, we require primary source documents. Those documents have to come from places like the applicant's school for transcripts, from the applicant's employer for verification of employment. There has to be background checks completed. Once the application is completed, then our nurse examiners can start the application process for completion. Another compounding factor is that 97% of our applications come in incomplete. Once an application comes in that's incomplete, it causes the nurse examiner to have to reach out to the applicant, at which time it becomes a very high-touch, high-communication process, which takes a significant number of weeks and sometimes months. I am presently working on applicants that have submitted their application in early November. So,
is there a process for a temporary license, which is different than a full license for nursing?
There is a process for a temporary license, but they still have to complete the application.
Thank you.
There's a loss of income for the nurse coming to Alaska with the up to 4 month delay in getting licensure. The average wage for Alaska nurse is about $85,000 or $85,000 per year, and that means that they could lose up to almost $20,000 waiting for their license just to come in. But most importantly is the loss of patient contact hours. We think about patient care most of the time in the inpatient setting, but a lot of the times now, patient care is moved to the outpatient setting. A lot of nurses are working in places like home health, in hospice, in education, in public health, and telehealth. Nurses are really everywhere. One of the biggest needs are actually nurse case managers, especially here in Alaska, and people called nurse navigators that help you with your prescriptions, they help you with your appointments, they help you figure out the complex system of healthcare. And then we have two nursing schools, and as the previous director of the UA School of Nursing, I can say that we do have great schools, but we don't have enough nursing graduates. We have approximately 250 graduates from UAA every year, and Charter College graduates approximately 75 graduates. Of those graduates, 95% of them have a job within 6 months. In some places, all of the graduates are hired at the exact same facility. At the bottom of that last slide, there is some data from HRSA demonstrating this was from January 2020, and it demonstrates that Alaska is in need of significantly more nurses. In fact, by 2030, there is to be an expected need of 5,400 nurses. We are number one in the nation for the need for registered nurses.
Senator Begich?
Couple of questions on that HRSA document. Is there a projection for what our unmet need is today? I see the next slide says 67 vacancies, but what is the percentage unmet need that we would compare that 22.7% in 2030 to today's need?
So what's our percentage of need today?
Yeah. Minus what?
Well, I don't have the statistics to kind of tell you what it is today, and I'm basing it off of what HRSA has developed for 2030.
Right.
So moving forward.
Yeah, well, I'm just curious today. And
yeah.
Part of the reason I'm curious is the largest, Mr. Chairman, may I?
Yeah.
The largest growth, you know, area we have has been the healthcare industry, but that's really been driven by the rapid increase of Medicaid expansion and things like that. And at a certain point, do the projections take that into account, that in fact that there'll be a leveling off perhaps of that need? With
There might be, but I will say that the average age of a nurse is 50 and to 55, so in 10 years from now they're 60, 65, so there's a huge retirement of nurses that are expected as well. And then, of course, for Alaska, our population of over 65 is supposed to double within the next, I think, 20 years. So I think that both sides, like, that there definitely will be still a significant need for healthcare and for nurses.
And if I may, one last follow-up. The University of Alaska, you did the School of Nursing at the University of Alaska, and, you know, we identified through other committee work that there's been a reduction in a number of different fields as a result of, you know, budget cuts and things that have affected the University of Alaska. How has the, those cuts, in your experience as the former director of the nursing program, at least I think you said at UAA,
mm-hmm.
How have those cuts, what impact have they had on the nurse population that we're producing, the recruitment, and those kinds of things? You know, what I'm trying to identify here is it an actual shortage based on actual people not interested in the career, or is it a shortage based on the system not having the capacity any longer because we've taken away resources?
So through the chair, and I apologize, I did not do that earlier, but through the chair, Senator Begich, so I will say one of the key issues related to the UAA School of Nursing was in relationship sometimes to getting faculty and faculty here so that they could teach nursing. There's a definite want for nursing students. There's a significant number of people in Alaska that would like to go to nursing school. Did the budget deficits create issues? I think so, because it was a national, you know, declaration of financial exigency, so that kind of makes people nervous to jump on board and become faculty in a place where it's financially unstable.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure. I'll do some questions now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in July of 2019, nursing applications went online. They can now be conducted online. And they're still taking 12 to 16 weeks. I understand that one day a week, the licensing examiners devote, they don't even answer the phone, they simply devote themselves to addressing license applications. It sounds like the division has some incredible inefficiencies. What is the problem?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, so one of the problems is just volume. We receive over 350 applications sometimes per month. There is a backlog that they are still working on significantly. And again, I would take it back to that primary source documentation. That's out of the applicant's hands. They don't have the wherewithal to just grab that document and hand it in. It has to come from a university. It'll have to come from an employer. So they're waiting on other people. So some of the inefficiencies is related to the process and those primary source documents.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A follow-up?
Yes, please.
So how many temporary licenses are issued?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, we can get that information for you.
I think it was in the last audit.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Do those temporary licenses take very long to issue?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, they can, because you have to, for the temporary licensing, you have to still complete a certain part of an application and ensure that the applicant meets criteria that's there for the temporary license.
Right. And what are the circumstances, Mr. Chairman?
Please continue.
Thank you. So why would someone apply for a temporary license?
I had a recent graduate apply for a temporary license. I'm sorry, through the chair, Senator Giesel. I had a recent graduate apply for a temporary license while she was transitioning on to take her NCLEX. She filled out a form for the temporary license. We had to do her background check, and then we moved forward. And she, once she gets her RN license, then the temporary license will go away, and she'll have a full license.
So there actually is opportunity to become licensed while waiting for results and then go through a fuller licensing process. So in an emergency, let's say there was an outbreak of coronavirus. The board would be capable of issuing temporary licenses to meet that need. Is that true or false?
Would you like to answer that?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, we had a situation not too long ago that we'll all remember, the 2018 earthquake. And there was, in the first few days, really an unknown of the extent of the earthquake. So there was an effort from states down south that heard about it, heard it sounded dramatic, wanted to send nurses up. And it took over a week to get temporary licenses for each of those nurses. It wasn't an overwhelming response, but it was a dozen or so nurses, and we had to mobilize several people to kind of prioritize those and expedite them. So during that week, as we were all assessing, nurses weren't able to go home and check on their homes. They weren't able to go home to their families because that would leave patients and hospitals sustained damage and so forth. So in an emergent situation where that was maybe minimally emergent, something like coronavirus, where maybe we need hundreds of nurses, maybe we need them out in the rural areas of Alaska, that would prolong that paperwork process of getting a temporary license, because they still have to apply, they still have to pay, they still have to go through a vetting process. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, to speak to the question about licensing inefficiencies, I just wanted to underscore that what Dr. Murray is really saying, and what I think this bill tries to help to do, is to diminish or eliminate the impact of most of those weeks, which is that trickling in of documentation. The compact eliminates that for people who want multiple licenses within compact states, because one of the home state has already done that primary source verification. Our staff, we try to keep a lean operating machine, but we can usually, from the time of a completed application, get them done within 10 days. So the delay is not really on the evaluation and processing. The delay is waiting for that complete application to come in, so all of the pieces of information are gathered. States like California, they have some efficiency problems, and it takes 6 to 8 months for us to get a verification of licensure from the state of California. So anyone who's coming up from a state that they're having problems experiences a delay. And if someone has something on their application that raises a question, then it goes to our investigative team, so that can also be a delay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is concerning. It sounds like the process has deteriorated, because in the past we've had outbreaks of RSV, respiratory syncytial virus. It affects newborns. It affects them predominantly in rural Alaska. And we've had the need for specialized neonatal nurses. The board has expeditiously executed those temporary licenses and has worked hard to put that process in place. When I was last engaged with the board, that was a very efficient process. So it sounds like it's really deteriorated, and yet you've gone to online applications.
If I could address that through the chair, Senator Giesel.
Ms. Chambers, you want to say who you are?
Thank you. This is Sarah Chambers again. I appreciate that. We have expended a great deal of effort in looking at the efficiencies that we can control, but again, we can't control how quickly it takes documentation to arrive. And so if we're waiting on, in the case of the earthquake, waiting on the healthcare manager who was gathering the documentation for all of these nurses who wanted to come, they're all from the same facility, that's up to them. And that's up to them to be able to get that to us. Once we get it, we can process it quickly. And again, those were moved to the front of the line. But that's a process that under our current system and our current laws for emergency situations, that's what's required. So if it takes that time and that paperwork processing for a dozen nurses up to a week, then in the case of a true emergency, or if the earthquake had necessitated many nurses, then it could have taken longer, because we still are required to follow the checklist, the laws that are in place.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
So just thinking, so we're assuming that nurses right now in their home state go through the rigorous process of qualifying for a license, and then they decide to either move to Alaska or offer their services for Alaska, or they're temporary here for a year or what have you. Would it make sense then for them to come to Alaska, let's say we're part of like this compact or a modified compact, so they get a license for 60 days, and then by which during that time they have 60 days to provide the electronically their documentation, and they'll be motivated to do so. And, you know, you're saying that maybe there's bottlenecks out of their control. Well, that happens. But after 60 days, that their license is suspended until their documentation is complete. So, I mean, is that something that we can look at, or is that what's in the bill? Or what do you think?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I'm really glad you asked that question. The compact is a uniform agreement among all of the participating states. So all 34 states that are currently on the compact, 35 if Alaska joins, agree to all of the terms and all of the requirements. So this particular compact can't be modified or altered. However, there is another bill that has been introduced, SB 157, which is a professional licensing reform bill that would give more tools in the toolbox for the division and boards to offer modified or increased temporary licensing opportunities, very similar to what you're talking about. In that bill, which we hope will make it to your committee and beyond, in that bill, it affects all professions. So this compact is specific to nurses, so it's a little narrower. But it also doesn't require nurses to go through the documentation gathering and process that we're describing. So there is an option. It's in another bill.
Yes.
Thank you for that. I've made a note of that. Because of the special nature of what you described earlier about the nursing shortage, about our aging population, we are a hub of the world, if you will. Any number of illnesses, pandemics could come to our state at any given time. Maybe it might make sense to pull out nursing from that large bill, or perhaps just think about how this bill could be enhanced or modified, if it's the will of the committee or what have you, to provide it kind of a blend of a temporary license. What you described in that other bill for a whole host of other regulations or a whole host of other industries, maybe we can do something for nursing. Just waiting to hear the rest of your presentation.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the duration of effect of a temporary permit?
I think it's
6 months.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, 6 months.
You are correct, 0868210. Tell me about licensure by endorsement.
What would you, through the chair?
What does licensure by endorsement mean?
Licensure, through the chair, Senator Giesel, licensure by endorsement is the state of Alaska licensing an individual through going through an application, and in that process, they are looking at the previous license that that applicant had, and that is what the basics are of license by endorsement. It's someone that already has a license somewhere else.
Correct. 0868200, licensure by endorsement. The board may issue a license by endorsement to an RN, APRN, et cetera, to a nurse that has worked as a nurse within the past 5 years if the applicant is licensed as a registered nurse, APRN, et cetera, under the laws of another state if they meet the qualifications for licensing in the state and meet the requirements of 170. So that sounds like a pretty expeditious process to me for someone who's licensed in another state.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, they still have to fill out an application and be vetted. So that's the process issued time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Well, let's get back to the bill and learn a little bit more about what this compact is and what it does. But I think we're actually on five or six. Okay, we're back to six.
Yeah, sorry. So what is the Nurse Licensure Compact? It's an agreement among states to offer an optional multi-state license to nurses who have met the 11 high standards, and they are the standards are equated all the way through all the states, education training, and they have to have discipline-free practice. It's similar to the Driver's License Compact, and actually Alaska is part of over 25 different compacts. The Alaska Board of Nursing continues to be able to retain full authority in regards to our standards, our practice, our rules, and the Nurse Practice Act. We do have the ability to remove a nurse with a multi-state license from practice in our state. We can remove their privilege to practice, and we can offer both multi-state licensure or single-state licensure, depending on the nurse's choice. The Interstate Compact is put into law. It's through statute and can only be changed when all participating states agree to new laws. And this is just the benefits to Alaska, and we kind of talked about a little bit, but reduces costs and burdens on nurses. We did three different town hall stakeholder meetings, one in Juneau, one in Fairbanks, and one in Anchorage, and we met many nurses that have multi-licenses in different states. We met one nurse that had 17 licenses, another one that had 39. So certainly it reduces cost and burden, reduces cost on employers and for bringing nurses into the state of Alaska, as well as getting them waiting for licensure, expedites disaster relief. And certainly it was brought up. We are now living with the realities of the coronavirus, which is scary. And then it adds options to keep Alaska trained nurses in the state. And when I was the director, I did see nursing students move to Idaho and to Montana and other states that were part of the compact so that they could decide where they wanted to practice. It increases access to care. It allows for telehealth, increases the telehealth solutions for Alaska. And it eases the burden on military families. My husband was a retired major in the Air Force, and I followed him in his career and have six nursing licenses. And at times, we had to wait before I could start back to work, waiting for the license. It also allows for seasonal employment flexibility. We're not waiting 12 weeks to get someone licensed in the summer, but they can come up in April and leave in September if they so choose or desire. And here's the requirements. The NLC requirements versus the Alaska requirements, and they are more comprehensive than the Alaska requirements. On the left-hand side, you'll see the NLC requirements. Right-hand side is the Alaska requirements. One of the differences is that in Alaska, you do not need to have passed an English proficiency examination. You would send in a notice that your course was taught in English. Number seven, you can have a license here in Alaska if you are found guilty of an offense that's such as a felony. With the Nurse Licensure Compact, you cannot. If you have misdemeanor convictions that relate to practice of nursing, you cannot have a multi-state license, but you can have a license in Alaska. And another just difference is that you must have a Social Security number for the Nurse Licensure Compact, And in Alaska, you are not required to have that. You can have a waiver. The next slide shows the states that are part of the Nurse Licensure Compact at this time. There's 34 states with Indiana and New Jersey that will be enacting this year, and there's pending legislation in 10 states this year. When I came on board with the board in November, or actually it was September, the board had just voted to move forward with the compact. So we did a survey in relationship to our licensees for the compact. We sent the survey out to all of our Alaska nurse licensees. There was over 3,527 respondents, and the majority of the respondents are from Alaska. And the next slide shows you.
Clarify.
Sure.
On that. So your 3,527, are those just the RNs, the LPNs, the advanced practice nurse, all of them, or just the RNs?
So the survey was sent out to anyone that had an RN or an LPN license. APRNs have both an RN and an LPN, an RN and an APRN license. So they did receive the survey.
Okay. Yes, Senator Von Imhoff.
So if a traveling nurse comes to Alaska and works here for 6 months or so, and let's say they work for, an Anchorage hospital, and they're working alongside other nurses in that same hospital that live here year-round, how are they going to be paid? Are they going to be paid the same amount as the nurses sitting next to them, or are they going to be paid a different rate? Is the traveling nurse cheaper for the hospital or not?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, those are questions for employers. I know that the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association is supportive of this bill, and there's someone on the line as invited testimony. But currently, travelers come up. We do have traveling nurses, and so what they're paid now as opposed to Alaska resident nurses or under the compact is a great question for an employer. That's not regulated by licensing.
Good.
Okay. Great. So on this slide, it shows that 89% of the Alaskan resident nurses that are in favor of joining the compact, as well as 87% of the nurses, if available, would apply for a compact licensure. And of course, 92% of the nurses of respondents were in favor of joining. And the final slide is an overview slide of subcategories. And this, so the overarching umbrella of this slide is that positive towards joining the compact. So if for instance, primary residency in Alaska, yes, primary residency in Alaska, 89% of those respondents are in favor of joining the compact. No, they were outside of Alaska, 97% were in favor of joining the compact. Member of a union during employment, 87% of those that responded that were members of a union were in favor of joining the compact. Of those not a member of a union, 94% were in favor. And then finally, holding a license outside of Alaska, of course, 96% were in favor of joining the compact. And those that just held an Alaska license, 87% of those were in favor of joining the compact.
Senator Giesel.
So I'm confused. I'm looking at slide 12, and you said there were 3,500 respondents, and they were all, well, perhaps I misunderstood. It says Alaska licensed nurses. Of course they're Alaska licensed. About 40% of those that hold an Alaska license have a primary residence outside of the state. And,
well,
but not, you weren't just polling Alaska resident licensed nurses. So you were asking people that were paying for a license here but living in Oregon whether they would like Alaska to be a compact state. Is that true?
Through the chair, yes, we polled all of the Alaska licensees.
Okay, all right. 40% of which, an estimate, 40% of those folks are out-of-state residents. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for the presenters at this time before we go into a sectional? Yes, Senator Von Imhoff.
So with the compact licensing agreement, are there so when a nurse comes in here right now, what are the fees to get a license? How much does it cost?
Through the chair, for a new application, $375.
So will that change with the compact?
Yes. So, well, we suspect so. The compact licensure would probably be more, considering that it would be able, the nurse would be able to move and not have to pay extra fees related to other states.
So, thank you. So, so if a nurse comes in now, he or she pays $375 to get to earn a license. You know, they provide the paper and so forth. So, if he or she comes to Alaska and they're we have this compact in place, do they have to pay $375 or thereabouts to get any an Alaskan endorsement or something?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the way that the compact would work is that nurses could still select to have a single state license, what they have now, or they could select to have a multi-state license, and that would give them the ability to work in any of the other 34 states that have a compact. They would not have to apply for licensure. They wouldn't have to pay another state for the privilege to work in that state because they've already gotten that multi-state privilege. The multi-state compact is tied to the home state. So anytime a nurse would move from Alaska to another compact state or move from a compact state into Alaska, they would have to transfer their home state status within the compact. So they would have to go through a sort of a transfer process, not reapplying and producing all the documentation, but just signaling that, yep, I'm going to become Alaska resident, and so I need to reapply. And then everyone renews their license in their home state the same way that licenses are renewed now. We're anticipating that the multi-state license we will be able to charge more for that, partially because at this point we see the numbers of applicants or licensees who are interested in a compact, but we don't know to a person how many people will want to join the compact in Alaska. So we expect that we'll be able to charge more for the multi-state compact, and then as we do annually now with the board, adjust fees. And we've made a commitment that the multi-state license is not going to cost single state licensees more, because we now have the ability to track that information, those investigations, the staff time. We want to make very sure that Alaska nurses who don't want to enter the compact are not paying for compact activities.
Yes.
Thank you. I suspect what this compact is going to do is not necessarily have several Alaskan nurses, or I guess I'll phrase it this way. I'm less concerned about Alaskan nurses deciding to be part of the compact or not. What I'm more thoughtful of is nurses in other states wanting to try Alaska out for 4 months, 6 months, 8 months, a year, what have you. There'll still be Oregon residents, Washington residents, Idaho residents, and they'll be paying their money there but practicing nursing here in Alaska. So it's not we're not necessarily going to get money for that. My concern is I just want to make sure that, you know, that there's not a purposeful attempt to avoid paying licensing fees by taking out-of-state nurses at a convenience who want the Alaskan adventure. $375, you know, it's not a great deal of money, but when you times it by 500 people, it does. And, you know, just want to make sure, again, my first question is that what are we going to be paying these nurses? So if you've got someone coming to Alaska and they're at a pay rate of, you know, however much money a year, an hour, and are they cheaper? Are they more expensive? Are they the same? What is it? So I get your argument. You made a good argument. It's a very reasonable argument. But I also think that, you know, I just want to make sure that this is not going to displace Alaskan nurses. that we're not going to make it to the point where our nurses are going to be struggling to try to find jobs. You know, so those are just things that are on my mind.
And I just want to add to Senator Von Imhoff's question before we go to Senator Baggage. I guess licensure fees go toward investigations for bad actors or for complaints and that sort. And so we want to I personally want to make sure that we're not going to short fund those services so we that we provide as a state for safety of our residents that may have a complaint upon the practice of a nurse that may be practicing upon them. And so with this, is there a possibility or a way that we can add on an additional fee if needed to be for for nurses that are coming up here for under a compact so we can make sure we're not shortchanging those investigative services providing for that as well?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's why we're considering setting this multi-state compact fee higher for the nurses that are home. Their home state is in Alaska. The compact itself doesn't allow for the state someone is visiting to assess an additional fee or go through an additional paperwork process that kind of circumvents the whole purpose of the compact. So every state has its own fee setting process. Right now, Alaska's nurses pay for all bad actors. They pay for unlicensed practice, people who are not even licensed, who get caught having photoshopped their nurse's license. And for anyone who decides to act up, they're currently paying for those people now. So we want to take the system that already exists and make sure that we're tracking when we do an investigation of a multi-state compact nurse that we're allocating that expense to those who are in the compact. The states that have already, the 34 states that have already gone before us and gone through the growing pains and the adjustment period, have not seen an overwhelming flip-flop of activity in those areas, such as you mentioning and Senator Von Imhoff has mentioned. We do want to take care that we're thinking through all concerns, and so I appreciate your bringing those up so we can be sure that we're doing a deep dive and analyzing those. And with 670 jobs available in nursing right now in the state, there's quite a delta between the available nurses and the available jobs, and so that would be something good for us to assess once we've hit something closer to filling all the available jobs.
Senator Baggage?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things. Just on that last point, but there is a demand. I heard that earlier. There is a demand here. It's just that we're not able as a state to provide the training and recruit the faculty and do that kind of thing. There's definitely a demand of in-state residents to want to have these jobs. Just a couple of things that what I heard you in the answer to Senator Von Imhoff's question was really our residents then would pay more, but out-of-state residents would actually not pay anything if they came up here. I mean, that's what I heard you saying.
Through the chair, yes, Senator. And that's how the compact works. If Alaskans want to go to, if they have elderly parents down south and they want to go work for 6 months and take care of them or snowbird, if they want to engage in telehealth, say you're a flight nurse in Alaska and your patient goes down to a compact state, then you have to have a license to care for that patient once you land. And so that would be an example. Dr. Murray was a flight nurse. There are plenty of opportunities for Alaskan residents to benefit from not having to pay when they want to utilize additional economic opportunities like telehealth or even to do their existing jobs.
Senator Baggage?
But you understand that sounds almost like a disincentive to keeping people in the state, which is one of the reasons why you're also suggesting we do this. This is, it's not like me to want to trap people in Alaska, but if we have a 670-person shortage today and then we add an additional incentive for people to leave the state that, you know, might have significant issues around economy and other things, I see this could be potentially a disincentive to filling our nurse gap here, not an incentive to doing that. Mr. Chairman, I mean, 21% of our residents, 21% of our workforce today are not in-state residents. They get our services and they pay nothing for them. And this seems to me to be an example of increasing that. And so I need some reassurance here, I think.
And maybe some of the employers that are can also speak to that and invite testimony, but please.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, this is Danette Schlater of the Board of Nursing. I have a primary Alaska license. I always have. My entire 25 years have been in Alaska. 3 years ago, I answered the call to help train new nurses through online education. I have to have a license in Montana and in Washington, which I've never cared for an actual patient in those states, in order to teach online. I'm lucky. I only have to have 3 licenses. A nurse educator that we met has to have, she said she has to have 37. In every state she has a student, she has to have a license because teaching nurses is practicing nursing. So it addresses an issue where I know that there are highly trained nurses in Alaska who would like to teach online, and online education is very popular in advanced practice, in doctorate programs, in RN to BSN completion programs. But these nurses don't want to have to get licenses in every single state of which they have a student.
Chairman, I do have a follow-up and then one other question.
Yes, and I just want to remind folks of our time, too, and the folks that are waiting online, we're going to continue this hearing next Friday as well on the 6th, and we've received a lot of written testimony, and if you don't have, would like to submit more written, if you're online and have not submitted written testimony, our email address is shss@akleg.gov. Senator Begich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You just mentioned that it's a disadvantage to advanced practice nurses, and they're actually, according to your page 2, not eligible to enter the compact.
So through the chair, Senator Begich, if you are an online instructor who is teaching advanced nurses, you would still have to have licenses in those states.
And just, again, yes, Mr. Chairman, just following up on that, you mentioned Washington and Montana for yourself. Montana is in the compact, but Washington is pending but not in the compact today.
That is correct.
Yeah. The last question I had relates to, and maybe 2 parts, but who regulates, which government regulates the nurse licensure compact?
So through the chair, Senator Begich, the Alaska Board of Nursing has full control and sovereignty over nursing practice in Alaska.
So I actually asked a different question.
And I guess to follow up on that, how does disciplinary actions work? How does the regulatory process work for a nurse?
I'm asking a slightly different question. The NLC itself, the Nurse Licensure Compact itself, has structures and processes that can be changed, you know, from time to time, and we will be under those processes if we sign into the compact. So which government is
sure.
in charge? Is that federal government? Is that some state government? Which government is in charge of that?
Through the chair, Senator Begich.
You are.
Pardon?
Who are you?
Sarah Chambers. Thank you. Need to get some men up here. just like the other 27 compacts, including the driver's license compact, mining compacts, children's placement compacts, there is a body that's made up of the member states that they're sort of the ones who facilitate the conversation, and that's called the Interstate Commission. So if Alaska joins, there will be then 35 people such as Dr. Murray, executive administrators, or Ms. Schlater, who are the board chairs, who represent the state. Each state has an equal voice. And the terms of that commission, their scope and what they can and can't do, is in the bill. So the legislature and all legislatures adopting the compact say that the state boards retain sovereignty over practice and that state law
limits and sets the priorities and the requirements for licensure. The commission has nothing to do with the day-to-day evaluation of nurses. It's all the group that gets together and talks about how do we facilitate our conversation of how the compact is going to operate. It takes a change in state law, all states participating to be able to change the standards of licensure or the terms of that.
Thank you for that answer.
You're welcome.
Before we go to Senator Giesel, has our Department of Law reviewed this compact and weighed in with a letter or with?
Mr. Chairman, since this is a governor's bill, the Department of Law wrote the bill. So we've worked with the Department of Law for many months back and forth going through the drafting, and this is the product of their drafting.
Thank you. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So going back to questions related to what will nurses from other states be charged to come to Alaska, and your answer was they will not be charged anything. They bought a multi. So again, adding up your own numbers from, I think it's slide two or somewhere in there, the number of licensees. Yeah, it's on page two. I get about 15,000, round number. Estimate is 40% of those are registered in Alaska but don't live in Alaska. So that's 6,000 people who will not be paying for licenses here. That's pretty big loss of revenue for the Board of Nursing, which has a balanced book right now, which is good. How do you think you'll maintain that with a loss of 6,000, approximately, licensees?
So through the chair, Senator Giesel, not all of those licensees are in compact states. So there's a percentage of licensees outside of Alaska who would still, if they wish to practice in Alaska, would still need to get an Alaska license because they're not part of a compact. We do expect that there will be perhaps up to 4,000 nurses that may be a loss of revenue to the board. Conversely, the workload on the board we expect also to decrease because we're not processing all those licenses. So we've had our conversations internally and with the staff to answer their questions about, will the expenses of the board decrease, and to keep that balanced book. If we end up, as we suspect, not having to have as much staff to process those 4,000 licenses, we don't have to anymore, then through attrition, we will either assign a staff member to a new program that maybe is growing, or people look for other jobs occasionally and we'll just not fill that position. So that's where we're really keen on, is not only tracking those expenses so we can have that transparent conversation with the board and all stakeholders so they know that their multi-state license might go up because those costs are going up, but we're also looking for the opportunities to recognize that the expenses of the board have the potential to go down.
Okay. Yes, Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that makes sense. These are approximately 6,000 people that are already licensed here. To renew a license is an online application that takes maybe 10 minutes. It shouldn't cost your staff anything to process, and yet that's what the board requires to stay solvent, that renewal fee.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, when I first came on board, I did a study to see how many nurses actually renew during each renewal period, and we lose actually about 3,000 nurse licensees each renewal. It's interesting to me the dynamic of the nursing board. We kind of have this significant steady rate of nurse licensees, and then we have the nurse licensees that come, and sometimes they will get an Alaska license, but they won't renew because they've gone to a different state, or they've moved on, or maybe they're coming back. So it's very fluctuant. We do have that kind of solid base, but then the ones, up to 3,000 are kind of fluctuating in and out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Ms. Chambers, if you want to go through your sectional.
I'd be glad to. Thank you. Oh, So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the sectional for SB 179. First, Section 1 amends AS 0802-010, professional designation requirements, to add AS 0869, which is the multi-state nurse licensure compact chapter, which is created by Section 23 of this act, as a qualification designation requirement for registered nurses. Section 2 adds AS 0869 to audiology exemptions to allow a nurse that holds a multi-state license to perform hearing sensitivity evaluations. And I'll try to batch those as much as I can. There are a lot of, much of this bill is adding this compact license where nursing licenses already exist. So we just have to go in and add AS 08069 wherever AS 0868 exists. Section 3 extends the Board of Nursing's existing authority to govern the multi-state license in AS 0869 and identifies the executive director of the board as the Interstate Commission Licensure Compact Administrator, who is currently Dr. Murray. Section 4 exempts AS 0869 from the Administrative Procedures Act, as nurses licensed under this chapter are subject to the due process provided in the NLC. And I do want to point out that the compact language that's in the bill also states where the Administrative Procedures Act of the state is preserved. Section 5 requires the registered nurse or the licensed practical nurse offering to practice in the state to submit evidence of qualification to practice and to be licensed under this chapter. Section 6 extends the existing required qualifications in AS 068-170, qualifications of registered or practical nurse applicants, to nurse applicants under the multi-state license. Section 7 clarifies that 0868-190B, license by examination, pertains only to Alaska State nursing licensure. Section 8 creates a new subsection under AS 0868-190 under license by examination, which explains that if the qualifications are met for both the multi-state license under 0869 and 0868-170, then the Board of Nursing shall issue a multi-state license. Section 9 amends AS 0868-200, licensure by endorsement, which Senator Giesel mentioned earlier, to pertain only to single state licensure in Alaska. Section 10 amends 0868-220 fees to authorize the department to set fees for multi-state licenses issued by the board. Section 11 amends AS 0868-230 under use of title and abbreviation to authorize a multi-state license holder under AS 0869 to use the title registered nurse and the abbreviation RN. Section 12 amends AS 0868-230B, also under use of title and abbreviation, to authorize a multi-state license holder to use the LPN or licensed practical nurse designation. Section 13, same area, use of title and abbreviation, adds single state language to temporary permits, and to note that an LPN that holds a temporary permit in the state can use the title licensed temporary licensed practical nurse and the abbreviation TLPN. Section 14 clarifies in AS 0868 lapsed licenses that a single state or multi-state nursing license may be reinstated if lapsed for fewer than 5 years. Section 15 through 19 amend AS 0868-270 and AS 0868-275, both disciplinary sections, to add the multi-state license to the existing types of licenses that may be disciplined by the board.
Okay, so quick question about that.
Yeah, standard baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if you invalidate somebody who has a multi-state license, if you were to say no, does that affect them in every state then?
Through the chair, yes, Senator, it does. If someone's found to be in violation of a statute or regulation in the state where they're authorized to practice, that Board of Nursing can say you're guilty through our administrative procedures and you're not welcome to practice in this state. We report that through the nurses database, which we currently use, and the notify the other state, and then the state can take action on that license. No nurse with active discipline can hold a multi-state license, so that state would have to revert them back to a single state license.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Section 20 maintains exemptions and ASO 868-800 for nurses who are working in limited circumstances under a license issued in another state. Section 21 amends ASO 868-805 delegation of nursing functions to include nurses who hold a multi-state license. Section 22 amends ASO 868-850 definition of advanced practice registered nurse to include nurses licensed under a multi-state license. Section 23 is the language of the Multi-State Nurse Licensure Compact. And I'd be happy to go through that if you'd like for me to delve into each paragraph in that section, Mr. Chairman?
No.
Okay. Section 24 through 36 amend statutes to add ASO 869 to the definitions of nursing as found throughout the state law.
And what page are we on?
Skipping ahead, we are on page 32. And that's section 24. So 24 through 36 amend various nursing definitions. So then we skip ahead to section 37, which is on page 38. And section 37 allows the department to adopt regulations necessary to implement the changes made by this act to take effect on the effective date noted in section 38, and 38 and 39 set effective dates for the bill.
All right, Senator Vandenhoff.
Thank you. So I think you answered this, but I just want to make sure I understand it. So I would imagine that there are unique statutes in each of the 34 states with nursing that are special to that state. So if a person comes up to Alaska and they're part of the compact and they violate a unique statute here in Alaska that's different than all the other 34 states, would they still then not be able to practice in the other 34 states even though they violated one unique thing here and vice versa?
Through the chair, they would lose their privilege.
Your name?
Oh, sorry, Marianne Murray, Executive Administrator, State Board of Nursing. They would lose their privilege to practice in Alaska, at which time we would have to do an investigation to see if they were truly in error or broke our laws, et cetera, then we would work with the home state to have the license revoked or whatever licensing type of action to happen. But if they have anything to do with nursing, any nursing practice, they are not able to have a multi-state license.
Yeah, follow up.
So I understand that you had talked about there was like 11 different or 11 things that were similar or standard among them. But when a traveling nurse comes to Alaska, are you going to hand them a pamphlet that says, here's the unique things. You always have to wear a hat when you're outside, you know, or whatever it is. So so that way they're not caught unawares or is it up to them to, like, go through the statute book and figure out what's the unique things?
Through the chair, Representative Von Imhoff Danette from the Alaska Board of Nursing. Nurses are responsible for knowing their Nurse Practice Act in the state of which they practice. Similar, and I know that nursing licenses and driver's license are not the same, but if you drive in another state, even though maybe in Oregon it's against the law to pump your own gas, you're required to know that, and you're held accountable to that state's law. So inherent with having a multi-state license, these nurses are going to have to be familiar with the Nurse Practice Act of each state in which they practice.
Senator?
Thank you. I think so. Sarah had her hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Senator, we don't do that now. We do exactly what Chair Schlatter said, that we make sure that those statutes are and regulations are available to them, that they know where to find them, that we tell them that you need to know these things, and here's what these things are. Certainly employers have a fiduciary responsibility to limit their own liability to make sure that they know, but there isn't anything that we do now for nurses who are travelers to test them on their knowledge or make them sort of jump through hoops to prove that they know Alaska's law. So this wouldn't change what we're doing currently.
So a nurse moves up here from, I don't know, one of the states that is a compact state. How will you know that person is here?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, just like we don't know now who's practicing in Alaska, we wouldn't know. We have, as you mentioned, licensees who live in other states. We don't know when they're practicing here. We don't know federally if they're a member of, they're practicing for a military base, for an Alaska Native organization. They're exempt from Alaska licensure. So it's really not dramatically different than the large population of nurses that we don't keep tabs on as a board of nursing or a division right now.
Follow-up, Senator?
Except for one difference. If that person violates the Nurse Practice Act, you have collected a licensing fee from them at this time that will help offset the cost of adjudication of their violation. With this compact, you will not have that financial availability. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Baggage.
Following up on Senator Giesel's question, thank you, Mr. Chairman, but you do know there's 20,306 licensed nurses in various categories because you have license numbers for them. So I think what I would maybe to add on to your question, Senator Giesel, is we wouldn't have that level of knowledge any longer about how many licensed nurses there are in Alaska because, in effect, it would be all compact licensed nurses potentially or hypothetically could be in Alaska, and you wouldn't necessarily know that. And I think that was getting more to what your perhaps what your question was. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that, I think, is the concern. So at least today, there are 20,000 names that you can identify because they're in the PowerPoint, or 25 licenses you can identify because they're in the PowerPoint. But so that actually is a little – I'm not quite sure what that means, but I'm a little concerned about that perhaps.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Begich. That is why
– You are.
I'm sorry, I'm Sarah Chambers. We need, like, name tags in front of us. Thank you. thank you. So we – and I've lost my train of thought now. So
the
20,000 nurses, thank you. We have access through – the nurses database that we use now to know who are members of the compact. We have the ability now to gather data when people file a complaint against someone who maybe, you know, they had a bad experience with, they had bad a service they didn't think was compliant, and we would go through the same process. I think that knowing how many licenses people are practicing, nurses are practicing in the state is important for certain data collection points and certainly to estimate fees, as Senator Giesel has mentioned. But those are really key points that are more important at the employer level because the employers are the ones who either they have a nurse or they don't. And if they don't have the nurse now, then they get the nurse in, and they're responsible for that day-to-day quality control and management of how a nurse is practicing, whether they're in a private clinic under a doctor whether they're in a large facility under a chief nursing officer. That's kind of where that partnership or that magic happens.
Well, we are at that time here. We're going to continue this hearing next week. I just want to make a request. If you can possibly come to our office and outline sort of where the rules are set in place for fees in the compact, that we can't, as a state legislature, can't charge a in-state nurses, I don't want to say tax, but a fee to practice nursing within our state outside of the compact agreement. And, I don't want to, like I said, shortchange sort of the practice of the investigative and just our work of the board. And in case that those fees may be needed at a later date and time, you may find that maybe the board nursing does go into the red during the next audit. And thus, we need to change the auditing time frame of when that audit is next due. If this was to go forth, maybe that needs to be set in within this bill as well to set a new audit date. But with that, we are, is there any other committee comments?
I just want to thank everybody that has been on the phone, and I guess, sorry we didn't get to public testimony, but we're going to have it next Friday, say?
Yes. All right. Again, thank you, everyone that attended. Sorry for the folks that we did not get to the testimony part of this bill. This is a very complex and have a lot of impact, meaning legislation here in our state. The committee will not meet on Monday or Wednesday. On Friday next week, we'll return to SB 120 and SB 179 and conclude our public testimony on SGR 13, our constitutional amendment that we had on the committee Wednesday. With that, we are adjourned at 3:01 p.m.